You're listening to the Charge Forward audio blog by Chargebacks 911, bringing you the latest in payments and fraud. To learn more about how Chargebacks 911 can help you reduce chargebacks and recover revenue lost to fraud, visit us online at chargebacks911.com.
This episode is a replay of a webinar entitled Securing Digital Payments with Technology, featuring experts from Chargebacks 911 and 2Checkout.
We're joined now by fraud and payments expert Don Bush, Vice President of Partner Engagement at Chargebacks 911. Today, Don will take us through some tips on how to curb fraud and friendly fraud and avoid revenue losses. Thank you for joining us today, Don.
Thanks again for putting this on. The folks at 2Checkout, we really appreciate what they're doing here. This education is key. And we're going to talk about some things today that are really important. When you start talking e-commerce, it's one thing to get a payment, make a transaction. It's another thing to keep that revenue. And it's really important as we go through that entire process. My name is Don Bush. I'm the partner, VP of Partner Engagement here at Chargebacks 911. We have a solution that is AI-driven. It serves a large number of institutions and merchants around the world, and we do complete lifecycle automation with a hub that integrates all the schemes and merchant data. That's how we get the data we get to make chargebacks management so good. But let's talk about the problem today. You know, Einstein said if I had 1 hour to solve a problem, I'd spend 55 minutes on the problem and 5 minutes on the solution. Well, we're going to have to do better than Einstein today. We've got 30 minutes, so we're going to double his speed and get through this. But we really have a big problem to talk about. We've heard the term the perfect storm. Well, the perfect storm is when three things came together to converge and it caused all kinds of havoc. We've got a number of things coming together that are causing changes and evolutionary things inside of e-commerce. You know, one of them is the growing competition. We've gone in the last 10 years from storefront to online to devices to Alexa, order me a pizza, to ordering from our watches and our cars. It's something that is just ubiquitous today. And along with that comes a lot of different technology that we have to understand, along with consumer behavior. Consumers behave differently, oftentimes based on how they're interacting with the online organization that they're interacting with. So there's one step. The next thing we've done is we've trained consumers to be very demanding. It used to be okay to wait for 20 minutes to get an email to say your order was confirmed. And now if I have to do more than a one-button checkout and I don't get my instant confirmation and shipping gets here tomorrow or sometimes this afternoon, I'm maybe a dissatisfied customer. So the demands of the customer are increasing. Then we've got other issues like this, things going viral. Hey, how can I charge back this pizza? I've heard you can do that. I just ordered 25 pizzas for a party. I want to charge this back so my dad doesn't get mad because I used his credit card. This type of thing going across chat sessions, DMs, websites, all over are making it even easier for customers to act badly and fraudsters as well. Now let's throw in a worldwide pandemic to just make the mix a little bit more difficult. When we start saying, well, now those storefronts are closed, so if you want to interact with us, you have to do something in a digital format. I read a survey put out by eMarketer a couple of weeks ago that said in dozens of sectors, they have seen as many as 40 to 50% of their users are either first-time users or new users to that particular app or website. And so now we've got this huge influx of customers doing things they've never done before when they're ordering food to be delivered or taking care of their banking online. All these things are new to these customers that we have to educate on this process. It's something that goes along with this new world of payments. Like I mentioned before, I can use my watch, my car, my phone, my tablet, my Siri or Alexa to purchase something using all kinds of different types of payments, whether it's in a wallet or crypto or something like that. All these things are converging, and we're having issues when we start talking about how do we retain that revenue. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. This is that chart I was talking about. So when you look at some of these grocery delivery in the U.S., about 30% and more are first-time users in this area over this last 60 days based on the COVID lockdowns and things like that. When you start looking at video conferencing, like what we're doing right now, online fitness, telemedicine, streaming, all these services, when you look at this, these are new users. And they're unfamiliar with using technology, maybe as you and I are. And so they don't know what happens when their payment goes through or they get something on a statement that says has a bad descriptor, and they call their bank and they say, I don't recognize this charge. Or they didn't get their soy sauce with their Chinese food, so they call their bank and say, they didn't give me what I wanted, and now it's a charge back, and there's all kinds of things that happen. It causes this chargeback flywheel. A dispute happens, it's a threat to profitability, your customer lifetime value will decrease, your quality and your prices have changes, and the adoption increases when we start training bad behavior to our consumer base. So as you can see, you talk about the perfect storm, you make the transaction, you get the sale, and now you've got to keep it. Sometimes that is incumbent upon the merchant to make sure things go right, the issuing banks, and the consumers. We all have a part in this. The bottom line is merchants need help. I mean, this is happening 60 days ago. Half of this wasn't in place. Even if you did have a robust plan for growing your e-commerce business 25 or 30%, some businesses have grown by two or three times that. Online furniture sales have gone up 150%. I mean, you've seen some of the charts. People sitting at home saying, this couch is ugly, I need a new one. So this is the type of things that we have to deal with when we start talking about what are we going to do online to educate consumers, help merchants, and keep everything flowing the way it should be. Well, the first thing are, the steps are these. Educate. You've got to educate yourself as merchants, as online companies. You've got to educate yourself on the consequences of chargebacks. Many organizations look at this and say, gosh, it's just a cost of doing business. I just have to do this. It's a line item in my budget. I'm going to lose a certain amount of this. Well, that's not a great strategy. As more and more consumers start calling their financial institutions instead of the merchants, that's going to be a line item that increases over time and it becomes unmanageable. It also deflects the real problems that we're having. Did I have a problem with the product being delivered? Did I have a problem with the delivery itself? Did I have a problem with they tried to call and make an exchange and my customer service lines were too long? What is the real problem that I'm trying to deal with? And we'll talk about some of those things here in just a minute. I think we've also got to do some internal reflection. I call it an audit, an internal audit. And I'm going to make this suggestion as we go through. When was the last time you or somebody in your organization went to your own website, made a purchase, got the delivery of the item or the service, and then tried calling customer service to make a refund, get a refund, make an exchange, a return, and followed those steps? Oftentimes, if you do that yourself, you'll see what your consumers are experiencing and where there might be some holes in your strategy. Because today's consumers aren't going to sit on a call line for, you know, 15 or 20 minutes waiting to have their problem taken care of. They'll simply call their bank. I experienced this just this last week. I'm planning a trip. I'm flying for the first time in 6 months. I called the airlines to try and do something, and they said, you know, as you can imagine, we've got a lot of calls happening. your call will be answered in 3 hours and 12 minutes. I use the callback option so I could go on my day. But you can see consumers, if I had to go and say I want a refund on that ticket, I probably wouldn't wait for 3 hours. I'd probably do something else. And then you've got to put a plan of action in place with strategies and a phased approach that help put all these things together so that whether it's a second wave of COVID coming this summer or fall, whether it's the fourth quarter, whether it's other things that happen to your business that cause growth or cause other interruptions, you're ready for that in a way that makes sense. So let's talk about getting ready for tomorrow. The first thing, I mentioned this already, is conduct an internal audit. I'm going to give you several different areas that could be audited to see if they're being most effectively used in order to maximize your revenue, maximize revenue recovery, and minimize revenue loss through chargebacks. Create specific plans for each one of these areas, and we'll talk each area and we'll give you some pointers in each one of those. Then you've got to monitor and adjust as things happen. Back in February, things were moving along, probably according to plan. Come March 15th, when everything shut down, we needed to adjust. And if we didn't have those plans in place, we didn't have those monitoring tools, we'd be out of luck. Whether the business went up in volume or down in volume, what we noticed is as chargebacks continue to grow. And so if I was having a drop in transactions, similar to hotels or rental cars or airlines, people were calling to try and get their money back. They wanted to charge things back through their bank because hold lines were being affected and so forth. Same thing happened with, let's say, food delivery. They had a doubling in their transaction volume. Chargebacks, even if their ratio of chargebacks didn't change, they went up. Did I have the staff and the technology in place to manage that? So either way, I've got an issue. And then let's look at the ROI, whether it's internal people, technologies, outsourced vendors. Is it making sense for my business according to what I'm spending? So let's look at the first step of our internal audit. One of the biggest places we find chargebacks is merchant errors. When you start looking at how do I go in and win my chargebacks, what do I do to maintain the revenue that I already received, I think the issue is, do I have errors that are causing problems for myself? Those things might be things like what I mentioned. Go online and buy your own product. Try and return it. Are the return policies clear? Are the terms and conditions for refunds and exchanges? What about my shipping policies? Are those easy to understand? And if there's a delay, do I have a operational system that I can tell the consumer your product's been delayed? This is a big area over the last 60 to 90 days. Even if my area wasn't affected by a pandemic, the area for which the product may be sourced could be affected. That's going to delay deliveries and make my customers call their banks and look for chargebacks or call me and wonder what's happening. What are my customer service guidelines? All these types of things can cause my own errors and cause chargebacks. When I get my credit card statement or my payment statement, my bank statement, is it very clear the product I bought and the amount? Oftentimes, I run into this because I do these auditings myself. I talk to audiences all over the world, and I have these examples where I pull up my statement, and it shows XYZ ABC company a $99 charge. Well, I don't recognize that company. I'm certainly not going to give $99 to a company I don't recognize. So oftentimes, I'll either look for a further description on my statement, or I'll call my bank and see if they have further information. And if I can't get a good answer to what that charge is, I charge it back. That descriptor can cause all kinds of problems. So that's one step in how I can look at an internal audit in my own process and see what's going on. The other thing I would say is communicate, communicate, communicate. Even with the problems we've had in the last 60 days or so. If I got an email from somebody that I'd ordered something from saying, hey, we're sorry that this is delayed in delivery, I can understand that. I'm an understanding consumer. I know what's happening. But if I don't get anything that says this is delayed, all of a sudden, I think I'm being had, somebody stole my package, or I'm not getting what I ordered. How can I communicate customer service-wise? I can do chats. I can do texts. I can do emails. I can... one company that I saw, I thought it did a brilliant job. For every package they sent out, you open the box, the very first thing it said on the top of the box, call me. And it said, call me if this isn't what you wanted, if this isn't how you ordered, if there's any problems. It had a big 800 number on there, but it made it very, very clear that if there was an issue, call me first. And as the merchant, I will try and help you with whatever it is we need to do to remedy this problem. Communication is absolutely key. Let's look at the next step in our internal audit, and that's criminal fraud. This is criminal is when somebody has either stolen information, your financial credentials or credit card, they have an account takeover that has started to get into your banking or other financial credentials that you have, and they're using it to buy things or to set up accounts that are not authorized by you. Criminal fraud is another area. I know we've talked about it in this series, but I've seen several surveys that have shown that criminal fraud has doubled, tripled, quadrupled in certain areas. Criminals never let a crisis go without trying to take advantage of it. And they have stepped up like nobody's business over the last 90 days to take advantage of the new customers that are online and maybe don't know how things work as well, take advantage of consumers that are already a little bit skittish. And those are some areas when I say monitor and adjust, this is one of those areas. I've been in payments and fraud for the better part of well over a decade. And this is an area where it's not like Ron Popeil says, set it and forget it. This has to be looked at on a regular basis to make sure that my systems, my policies, my AI models, my vendor, whatever I'm doing, needs to be updated to manage the fraud that I'm seeing today. So review your current fraud settings. Sit down with your fraud team. What are they seeing that can affect what you're getting? What types of fraud are we most susceptible to in your business? If you're a gaming organization or you sell electronics, the fraud you see is going to be different. And so what you do to stop those things is going to be different. Work with your processor or your fraud team. Are there tools you're not taking advantage of that would help you? Look at your manual review process. Oftentimes, if you do a manual review process, things start to stick out there and tell me, oh, I'm getting more of this. Maybe I need to make these changes here. The last thing I'd say about this portion is chargeback region codes. When you get a chargeback, there's a region code on it. It says, you know, this is for this or this or this. The most common region code is fraud. That's simply because most consumers, when they call their bank and complain that they have a problem, the bank will often say, well, this looks like a fraudulent transaction. And so they code it as fraud because of the little amount of information that they have. So my recommendation here is when you see a chargeback region code, let the evidence determine if that region code is accurate. And look at those things because fraud is the number one thing that is claimed, but criminal fraud is actually the lowest of all things that cause chargebacks. Last thing we want to look at is friendly fraud. This is an area where somebody who hasn't stolen your information, but is maybe using your information, or you want to dispute a transaction because you're not getting satisfaction from the merchant themselves. This is the largest piece and growing of chargebacks today. It roughly is about 70% of all chargebacks can be related to friendly fraud. when we start looking at how to manage this type of area, we want to make sure that we have customer-centric policies. Are we transparent about the policies? We mentioned that earlier in the errors area. Communication is key. I hate to even say this, but it's something that needs to happen. Are we honest in our messaging and in our marketing? We want to make sure that we're saying exactly what the product is, how they'll get it, and what they'll get, so that they're happy with what they do get. And respond to every chargeback. This has an effect that I call the death spiral. If I don't respond to every chargeback, my payment processor may look at that and go, oh, well, they're not responding to most of these chargebacks, so the chargebacks must be accurate, or the consumers must be telling the truth in what's going on here. It doesn't give an accurate picture of what's actually happening at your organization. That could cause escrow accounts to be increased. It could cause approval rates to go down. You want to let people know that you are managing your business well and you respond to every chargeback. So creating a plan, create a specific plan for criminal fraud, merchant error, and friendly fraud. Look at those errors, areas, and see what we can do to update and get those things back in line. Collaborate. This is an area that I think oftentimes people feel like they're all alone. Fraud and payments and chargebacks, those aren't things we go to college for and get a degree in. It's kind of on-the-job training. But when we can collaborate with our internal teams, with our vendors, with our processors, we can come up with a much better answer and a much better program and a much better strategy to work today and for tomorrow. I say develop a prevent and recover plan. There are strategies out there to help you prevent chargebacks like alerts and VMPI. And then again, I can't emphasize this enough, respond to every chargeback. If this isn't something that you can do in-house because you don't have the manpower, the expertise, outsource it. It's an area that will pay dividends in the end and oftentimes very, very quickly. So that in a nutshell is what's happening, how to create a plan, how to go to your organization and say, this is a plan we need to create for tomorrow. Because you never really know what's going to happen tomorrow. Right now, we're seeing some let up of the COVID lockdowns, but most medical organizations say we're going to see a second wave. Whether it happens this summer or this fall, I think we need to be ready for it. Now we're going to add, when you look at your perfect storm, let's add a second wave to this fall and the fourth quarter shopping, which is usually the largest shopping time. We need to plan today to be ready for tomorrow so we can maintain the revenue that we get going forward. We have a really cool tool on Chargebacks 911. It talks about what your ROI is with your chargeback. So everybody's a little bit different. You can go on there and play with that a little bit and see if that makes sense for you. And with that, I'm going to see if we've got any questions out there, Eric.
Great. Thanks, Don. Yeah, we do have a couple. If someone's never done an audit of their system, where should they start?
I think the best place to start is just what I said. Go online and make a purchase. Walk through like your customers walk through. See what your customer sees. See how long it takes to check out. See what happens if I make a mistake. See what happens if I try to return a product or exchange a product or oftentimes, I can now go online and change delivery locations and midstream, right, with some services. Once I get that, how long am I on hold with customer support? What happens inside the box when I get it or the service when I get it? Am I notified via email? Do they notify me via text? You know, what are the ways that you're talking with that consumer? That's probably the first best audit step in going forward, because you knowing what you know and these merchants knowing what they know, they'll be able to pick out those errors pretty quickly.
Okay. During this period, during the pandemic, are the card schemes or issuing banks providing any extensions on time to dispute chargebacks or modifying any of those kinds of response time requirements?
You know, it's a great question. I get it all the time. Because even the card brands, they sent all their people home. So they're working from their living rooms and home offices and stuff like that. To date, there have been a few industries where they have offered that type of extension, mostly in hospitality, travel, hotels, where they will work a little bit there and loosen the rules for levels of fraud or chargebacks that you get. But for everybody else, they need to act as if all those times are exactly the way they have always been. I've got so many days to respond to a chargeback. This is a very fluid situation. It may change, but there has been no change right now in the terms and what I need to do to dispute a chargeback.
Do you think Visa and MasterCard are going to push the chargeback thresholds down further?
I think they will, but I don't think they'll do it immediately. You know, I think it was last year, the year before, that went from 1% to 0.9 from Visa. I think they're headed in that direction. I think they're actually putting things in place to help merchants and consumers, things like BNPI, where it's a consumer calls up to make a dispute, and now the folks at Visa can directly connect with a merchant and grab all kinds of information about that transaction. And now they have a lot of information when they're talking to the consumer. That happens in about 2 seconds. So now the consumer can see the transaction, and the Visa person can say, well, Don, you ordered this on Thursday. It came on Friday. You paid with this. So this doesn't look like it's fraud. It looks like maybe you just forgot that you made this purchase. They have found upwards of, you know, 30 to 60% of the time that actually stops a chargeback before it gets into the dispute process. So they're putting some things in place that will help merchants and consumers as well.
A question came through about what kind of plan, what kind of actions can a merchant do for each case of chargeback? I mean, if there's a stolen credit card, it's stolen, what can they do? There's not much they can do.
Well, if it is true fraud, if it is true criminal fraud, the issuing banks require you as a merchant to have some sort of a fraud system in place. And if that slips through and it is true criminal fraud, there is no changing that chargeback. That is 100% liability on the merchant themselves. And that's why I say that's got to be looked at on a regular basis. Fraud changes very quickly. And while we don't want to tighten the screws so tight that we reduce the number of accepted transactions, we do want to make sure that we are keeping right on top of actual criminal fraud and minimizing that as much as possible.
Do alerts and BNPI really reduce the number of chargebacks merchants have to deal with?
Absolutely. This actually started a few years ago. When you look at the chargeback process, it's very, very antiquated. It started in 1974 before, you know, Al Gore invented the internet. So it was a process that was very manual, labor intensive. It was a bunch of paperwork shuffling back and forth. As they've tried to digitally transition that to the online world, it still has a number of checkpoints along the way. And so when a consumer calls to make a dispute, these alerts say, hey, this is in process right now. It hasn't gone all the way through the chargeback process, so you haven't seen it yet, but it is in process. If you as a merchant want to respond now, before this gets completed, it'll never become a chargeback. So for instance, you may want to just authorize a refund. A refund is cheaper than going through the chargeback process. Or through the VMPI process, you have the opportunity to automatically authorize a refund, which is great. Or you can use data. And I think the VMPI process allows about 140 fields of data about that transaction. So now the information that is most useful for that actual transaction is at the fingertips of the issuing bank, which before they didn't, all they had was the consumer's information. Now they have the entire transaction at their fingertips, and now they can have an intelligent discussion with that consumer about, is this really what happened? Is this a legitimate dispute? Or is there something, you know, sometimes people abuse that system, and it holds that down.
Can you comment on fraud protection processes? Like if a merchant is new, can they put something in place, or is it just too big of an issue for a small company to handle?
No, that's what I say. Let's talk with who do you process through? You know, when you look at your processor, oftentimes they have partnered with fraud companies to put something in place for not only the littler folks, but for processes throughout the organization. So I would ask my processor first, what tools am I not taking advantage of that I can have turn on? I'm not a fraud expert as a merchant, especially a new merchant. That first chargeback is always devastating. But I want to make sure that I'm putting things in place that can help me and use all the resources I have. Once I get to a certain level of volume, then it's probably a good idea to call a fraud vendor specifically and directly and have them work with me. But I would start off with my processor. For instance, you know, BlueSnap is a processor. They do a great job. Merchants that get on that platform are automatically covered at a certain level, and they can take advantage of other tools as they go. So I would ask, it's always worth an ask, and see what I've got already in place that might help me.
Yeah, and to check out as well.
and to check out, exactly.
Yeah, yeah. I don't see any other questions, Don. Thank you so much for your time. Everyone, we have two more speaking sessions left. The next one starts at the top of the hour, so I'll see you promptly at the top of the hour. Thanks, Don. Take care.
Thanks, Eric.